This is Building Bridges with Ken Nash and Mimi Rosenberg.
The long-awaited release of the text of the Trans-Pacific Partnership, the TPP, as it has become known, has confirmed what was suspected, that the pact replicates many of the most controversial terms of past trade pacts that promote job offshoring and push down U.S. wages while expanding even further the scope of the controversial investor-state system and rolling back improvements on access to affordable medicines and environmental standards. Melinda St. Louis, the International Campaign's Director of Public Citizens Global Trade Watch, joins us to ferret out the most alarming provisions of the TPP and discuss the muscular efforts that must be employed to derail this quintessential capitalist juggernaut.
Thanks for having me.
Well, the unveiled secret TPP negotiated, discussed behind closed doors with tremendous amounts of corporate influence, 5,600 pages, has now been, the corporate veil, if you will, has been lifted. Give us what are some of the key provisions and tell us how they represent something that is even worse than we thought it was going to be.
Well, thanks again for having me on the show. As you mentioned, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, or the TPP, has been under negotiation for more than 7 years behind closed doors. And the 12 countries that the United States negotiated this with concluded the negotiations that we finally were able to see it. We had seen leaks from WikiLeaks of a few chapters over the years, and were very concerned about what the direction that this negotiation was going, because, as you mentioned, this was negotiated with extreme corporate influence. In fact, there were 500 to 600 corporate advisors who had access to the text this whole time, while the public and even elected officials were locked out. And so what we've seen, unfortunately, is while this is branded as a free trade agreement, it really is a wish list of big corporations of what they weren't able to, what they haven't been able to achieve through our democratic process. And just to give some examples, I mean, it expands the model that, you know, the failed model that people in the middle class in the United States have felt for the past 20 years of the North America Free Trade Agreement, or the NAFTA, which makes it easier for corporations to offshore American jobs. So it reduces the risks for companies to invest in other countries, and then provides incentives for them to do so. So what that has done is led to an overall depression of U.S. wages. It's not just the jobs that are offshored, but it pits U.S. workers in competition with workers who don't have basic labor protections. And in the TPP, this expands that to Vietnam, for example, which is the low-wage alternative to China. Workers earn 65 cents an hour in Vietnam. There is not a right to form an independent union there. So we see this kind of this race to the bottom continuing through the TPP. But beyond the economics and the bread and butter, which is really what I think Americans are very, very concerned about, there are these whole host of issues that have very little to do with trade. For example, our food safety standards. We pass laws to ensure that that there are adequate inspections of food when they comes through the border, to labeling of our food so that we know the country where our food comes from, or the whether it was harvested in socially responsible ways. These types of provisions are actually, they countervene our obligations in trade agreements like the TPP, and the TPP would expand that and flood the United States with unsafe imports. And some of the countries that the TPP that are in the TPP have very concerning standards. For example, on shrimp, on other seafood, currently only 1% of our imports that come from these countries are inspected, and this would continue. And it provides new ways for corporations to be able to challenge our border inspection policies. You know, we can go down through the list. The concern around medicine prices that I think that you mentioned, there are extreme monopoly powers by big pharmaceutical companies that are snuck into the TPP that would roll back even modest reforms that were achieved even under the Bush administration to protect access to medicines. And it would, and what that means is it raises overall medicine prices here and in developing countries where this can very much be a death sentence. And so it means, budget busting costs as well as lack of access to life-saving medicines for many people. There are concerns around human rights and, as you mentioned, labor rights and environmental standards as well. In the 5,600 pages, the words climate change do not appear at all. And at the same time, when we're supposedly trying to combat climate change, the TPP would actually would go in the opposite direction, would expand incentives for fracking, for getting to exporting fossil fuels, and would allow polluting industries to be able to challenge our environmental policies outside of our courts and get millions or billions of dollars in taxpayer compensation for environmental or public health laws that we need to protect the public. So it's quite shocking. I think people, when they first hear about it, it's hard to even believe. And it's also, it's unfortunately, it's buried in this massive tech that will that the U.S. Congress will have to be considering in the coming year, and and it's going to be very important for people to be mobilizing, learning about this, educating themselves, and mobilizing to make sure that this does not come to pass.
I feel like we've been enveloped by the proverbial giant vampire squid that during the Occupy movement was described by Matt Taibbi as the corporate Wall Street just enveloping us in every way, Goldman Sachs, etc. So let me continue to be overwhelmed before we figure out what is that muscular response that we need to push back this juggernaut that's being launched. Get to the issue also of sovereignty and democracy and what's not built in to this incredible array of trade pacts, if you will, that will rob us of, well, indeed, the issue of sovereignty and democracy. What's happening there?
Well, as we mentioned, this is negotiated, behind closed doors. The public has not been able to shape what the rules are through our democratic system. So the way that's negotiated in and of itself is undemocratic. It is brought to Congress now because of, unfortunately, the fast-track powers that President Obama was able to achieve after a huge fight past last summer. The TPP will be considered by the U.S. Congress with just an up or down vote, and you mentioned this is over 5,600 pages, no amendments, no ability to impact what the text is, and everything from internet freedom to medicine prices to food safety to financial regulation to labeling, consumer labels, to product safety is embedded in this, and this is just a yes or no. So in that way, it's extremely anti-democratic, and again, with corporations that have had a seat at the table, this whole time, and then buried in the text, as I alluded earlier, are these provisions that this is enforceable global governance. So these rules are enforced not through U.S. courts or through our laws, but through tribunals that are set up under the agreement, where trade lawyers are the ones who decide whether our government has violated our obligations under the agreement. And so there are two types of tribunals that are set up. On some of the chapters, Vietnam is upset with the way that we have complied with the food safety standards or others that are under the agreement or intellectual property standards. They can challenge us in a trade tribunal. And these are already set up under the World Trade Organization and other trade treaties, and we've seen a very huge concern around what this means for sovereignty. In fact, just last week, the World Trade Organization, well, because of a World Trade Organization ruling, our U.S. Congress just repealed our country of origin labeling of meat. What that means is we had a law that said that our beef and pork and ground beef and pork had to have a label on what country it came from. It seems like a no-brainer, right? But this was something that was challenged at the World Trade Organization. They ruled that that was a violation of our trade obligations. And we were, and gave $1 billion in sanctions per year until we repealed the law. And the U.S. Congress just repealed that law. That was because of an unaccountable trade tribunal, and that was the World Trade Organization. The TPP expands this, allows for more of these types of challenges to come to our laws. And then it goes a step further, and it empowers individual corporations, foreign corporations, to be able to sue our government outside of our courts and to seek millions or billions of dollars in our tax dollars in compensation if there is a law that they believe affects their future profit making. So what that means practically is that if in a community, in a state, for example, they decide to have a moratorium, in, such as in New York, on fracking or a controversial or ban a toxic substance, if there's a foreign corporation that says that is a violation of my right as an investor in this country, I will sue. I won't go through the courts. If I was a domestic company, I would have to sue in the U.S. courts, but I don't have to because I'm a foreign corporation. I go to this tribunal. It's three private lawyers who can rotate between representing big corporations one day and serving as so-called judges the next, and they can decide if that this law is a violation of the treaty, and then order unlimited amount of taxpayer compensation to these corporations. And this is, it sounds crazy, but this is actually not hypothetical. This is already happening under other trade agreements. We've seen Canada's moratorium, Quebec's moratorium on fracking has a $250 million suit against it. We've seen bans on toxic substances have required millions of dollars of taxpayer compensation from other countries to big corporations. And we're seeing more and more examples of this. And what the TPP would do, instead of learning the lesson from this, would expand it and would double our liability. There'd be 9,200 new corporations who are already in the United States that would be newly empowered to be able to attack our local, state, and federal laws that come down the pike to protect the public. It's quite outrageous.
You know, I just want to go back to one component of what you mentioned previously, and the TPP's labor rights provisions, which generally replicate the terms that were included in past pacts since going back to 2007, reforms forced on the then President George W. Bush by congressional Democrats. I'm still reeling at the reality of the politics involved and trying to get a better grasp on them of the Obama administration in pushing through the fast track component of this, and why there is political might, or the politicians are acting, certainly the Obama administration is the handmaiden for the corporate elites in pushing this through. And then I do want to talk a little bit more, flesh out a bit more about what we were talking about labor rights within this and offshoring jobs. So how do you understand
that has been the $10 million question, I think, for public interest advocates, trade unionists, environmentalists, really the entire progressive base has been scratching our heads for years, not understanding why, particularly the Obama administration, President Obama, when he was a candidate, said that he would renegotiate NAFTA as a senator, was very much opposed to this model of of trade agreements, and there was a lot of work to try to help the administration have a new model of what a trade deal would look like that would actually benefit the middle class and the American people and the people in all of the countries, as opposed to pushing this corporate wish list. And unfortunately, what we saw over the course of these negotiations was, you know, was this not only the same model, but a doubling down and actually pushing, you know, some of the even more extreme provisions like that the large pharmaceutical companies were trying to get in expanding their monopoly power to earn, you know, billions and billions more to expand their patents and their monopolies, you know, and Big Hollywood and Wall Street, you know, got Wall Street were able to sneak provisions into this that were able to, actually expand their ability to use these tribunals that I mentioned to be able to attack financial regulations in a way that they actually weren't even able to in past agreements that were negotiated under Bush. So it has been an extreme disappointment. I mean, I think the Democratic Party and the Democrats in Congress, almost all of them, have been opposed to this, which is quite, surprising against, a Democratic president. And there also have been a large block of Republicans who have been opposed to this too, for some of the sovereignty issues that we have been discussing. So this isn't actually a partisan issue. It's really the elites versus the public, and that's what you see in the polling as well. And getting into going back a little bit to the labor provisions, I mean, that's been something that's been quite heartbreaking, I think, particularly for the labor movement, is that, you know, the administration is trying to sell this and saying this is the most progressive agreement in terms of labor and environmental standards. But when you actually look at the text, what you see is basically the same provisions that have been in agreement since the Bush administration. Yes, there are some improvements over NAFTA, because in NAFTA, these provisions weren't even enforceable at all. But since the Bush administration, our trade agreements have had enforceable labor provisions. It matters what they are. The problem is they're too weak. You know, it says a country has to have a minimum wage. Okay, well, that's great. It doesn't say what that minimum wage has to be. It can be a penny an hour, and they would be able to be complying with the agreement. Or and there's a side agreement with Vietnam where they claim that this is going to, you know, they require changes in laws. Well, that sounds all well and good, but of course what matters is the political will to enforce those laws, and that's what the problem is in many of these countries. What you see is, yes, there is lip service paid to labor rights and environmental and conservation in the agreement. But when you look at what the rules are, the rules themselves, when it comes to labor and environment, they're weak. And even when they are enforceable, we have not seen even a Democratic administration willing to actually enforce the provisions that are in the agreement. And then you compare that with intellectual property or these, you know, monopoly powers for big pharmaceutical companies, and there you see those are enforceable, and there's a lot of teeth there, and the investor rights to be able to seek millions or billions of dollars in taxpayer compensation, that is enforceable. So you really see, you know, what's the goal of this agreement? It is not to raise the labor standards and environmental standards. It's to increase trade, increase the power of capital to be able to, to be able to challenge our public interest and environmental and public safety and our way of life, and actually to incentivize this offshoring of jobs and to pit workers against each other around the world, and leading to this race to the bottom that undermines the power of labor to be able to negotiate. And that's why you see, you know, the middle class and workers in the United States haven't received a raise basically in 30 years because of this model of pushing the power of capital through these trade agreements.
You know, Melinda, one of the other things you had mentioned, that the issue of climate change, climate control, climate justice is certainly not mentioned anywhere within the 5,600 pages, but neither, I gather, is the concept or term of human rights.
Yes, it's and that is extremely extremely worrying for the faith community, for women's rights organizations, for LGBT organizations, and advocates, because in the TPP there are very extreme human rights violating governments. Brunei is a sultanate in Asia. That country in 2014 instituted a law that Sharia-based law that allows for stoning to death of for homosexual activity and for adultery. And while this was happening, the United States continued to negotiate the TPP. There's nothing in the agreement that would bar benefits to market access benefits to the United States because of these extreme human rights concerning laws. Malaysia, which is in the agreement, has a terrible record of combating human trafficking. Just this past year, tens of thousands of ethnic minorities and migrants from Burma and elsewhere were found in migrant trafficking camps. There were mass graves uncovered in Malaysia just this year of trafficking victims. And instead of really addressing this concern, what we saw is cynically, and it was sickening to me to see that the administration actually upgraded Malaysia in its trafficking in persons report that the State Department puts out every year in order to facilitate its approval into the TPP. And so you see that what the goals of the TPP are is to expand this, you know, the corporate wish list, but turned a blind eye to the human rights violations that are happening in Vietnam, you know, political prisoners, the forced labor, child labor is rampant. And this is according to our own government's State Department reports. And yet, they turn a blind eye to that to push this through and have weak side agreements to supposedly address it. And, human rights, organizations and advocates in those countries have been reaching out to advocates in the United States to say that this is not going to help their cause, because the United States loses any of its leverage to be able to compel better action when we basically say, okay, you can be in this agreement and still have these horrendous conditions.
Melinda, nevertheless, you have off air insisted that it is difficult for this to move through Congress, and it is not a done deal. So in the time remaining, what is the best approach in concentrating our energies towards the defeat of the TPP, which is not a done deal, but obviously the implications of it are enormous and frightening, and should be frightening? What do we do to defeat it?
Well, as I mentioned, the U.S. Congress has the constitutional authority over our trade policy. Unfortunately, that last summer, after some very shady legislative maneuverings, fast-track powers passed by a very narrow margin in the U.S. Congress. So what that means now is that the Congress will just have an up or down vote after the administration puts its implementing legislation forward for TPP. And it is going to be a huge fight, as we already know. Unfortunately, the administration has said that this is going to be a priority for them. So they're going to be trying to push it through. In the House of Representatives, almost all of the Democrats have already come out against this trade model and were against fast track. There were some that went along with the administration. Now that the TPP text is out and we can see how damaging it is, it's important to get every member of Congress to say that they will not support TPP. There is a large block of Republicans who are also very concerned about TPP for different reasons. Some of them and some because of the sovereignty concerns and the concerns around depressing U.S. wages and offshoring. Almost all of the leading presidential candidates from both parties have come out opposing TPP, which makes it more difficult, you know, for this to be pushed through, particularly in an election year. And that's what this will be. They're slated to sign the agreement in early February, and then it will be up to the administration to decide when to submit the legislation, and then it will be for an up or down vote. So everyone needs to contact their member of their senators and their representative and say, I want you to come out early, I want you to come out now and say you will not support TPP, and you will vote no on TPP, and it is very likely that it will be possible for us to stop this in the U.S. Congress, particularly in election year when it is so controversial.
And I would strongly advocate that people use the material that you can find online at Public Citizens Global Trade Watch, and there are certainly local organizations that would work with you to organize forums, to educate your compatriots within your community, within your work sites, about what the Trans-Pacific Partnership entails and why we have to defeat TPP. And what a magnificent job you've done, Melinda St. Louis, to outline this 5,600-page monster for us and give us some sense of its key provisions and, most strategically, what we have to do to defeat it. I really want to thank you for joining us, and we will be on the case.
Thank you. And I encourage people in New York, there's tradejustice.net is a New York metro area organization to be in touch with, and expose the TPP.org is another great place for information.
And they are indeed. They are indeed. And again, we've been speaking with Melinda St. Louis, the International Campaigns Director of Public Citizens Global Trade Watch, and let's make it so. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
This has been Building Bridges, your community and labor report with Mimi Rosenberg
and Ken Nash. And log on to our website at www.buildingbridgesradio.org.